This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It is the Zach Gelb Show right here on CBS Sports Radio. New book coming out on October 13th. Make sure you get it. It's called The Captain, and it's authored by David Wright and Anthony DiComo. And now joining us is the former Mets captain and third baseman, and he was a seven-time All-Star in his playing days, and that's David Wright. David, can't thank you enough for doing this. Thanks for the time, and how you been?
Oh, are you kidding me? Thanks for having me. Appreciate that.
Well, really do appreciate you coming on. So you've been away from the game in terms of playing, and I know you had injuries throughout your career, but the last 2 years you've officially been retired and haven't been a part of the team for the regular seasons. Why did you think now was the right time to come out with a book?
You know, it's funny because Anthony, who did a wonderful job with the book, and he approached me right kind of after my last game in 2018, and he said, look, I'd like to write a book, you know, and I really want you to kind of partner up with me. And, you know, I joke with him saying that I didn't want him to screw it up. So that's why I kind of came on board to help him out. But, you know, for athletes, and I think baseball players in general, you play so many games that, you know, you don't get the opportunity to enjoy some of the successes you have on the field because you're always looking forward to that next challenge or you're looking forward to who you're facing tomorrow. You're preparing, you're trying to get better. So, you know, writing this book with Anthony and reminiscing about some of the good times and some of the good games and some of the good at-bats and some of those successes put a smile on my face because I got to kind of enjoy, you know, some of those games looking back on it and kind of, you know, watch some of those highlights. And it brought a smile on my face and, you know, really had a good time reminiscing and talking baseball.
Was there a moment or two when you're going through this process, and like we said, it's an extensive process, that you said, wow, maybe I didn't remember that, or maybe I didn't think about that memory or two in the last, like, 5-10 years?
Well, I think when you're in the middle of it, you think that you're a lot better than you really are. So watching some of this stuff, it was like, man, I thought I was faster. Man, I thought I hit that ball further. You know, so it's kind of funny how when you're in the thick of it, you know, you're thinking or you're seeing one thing, and then Anthony, our co-author, brings kind of another perspective, and then re-watching it on tape or film or whatever, you know, you kind of get to relive some of this stuff. So, there were certain, you know, at-bats or certain games where, you know, in my mind I had it going. You know, it wasn't like crazy big details. It was these little small details that, you know, I remember going this way, and it obviously went that way, or, you know, I didn't, you know, I really – got all that ball, but, you know, I really didn't, you know, kind of stuff like that. But, you know, what was real neat, too, is I got a chance to pick out 30 or so pictures for the middle of the book. And, you know, I called my dad and my mom in Virginia back home, and I said, hey, I need some pictures. Can you send some of the family pictures? So a couple of days later, I get 4 huge boxes of family pictures. And going through that and seeing my grandparents who have passed, you know, holding me as a baby, and, you know, my grandfather, my dad teaching me how to hit with this old big wooden bat in the backyard playing wiffle ball, and, you know, my grandfather, my father putting me in the pool, you know, with the wooden bat and swinging it underwater like Greg Jeffries used to do, you know, stuff like that really brought a smile to my face. And it was, you know, it was this cool experience to kind of reminisce all the way from, you know, as long as I can remember being a kid all the way up to obviously my final game and family life after baseball.
David Wright here with us on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. His book coming out on October 13th. It's called The Captain by David Wright and Anthony DiComo. What was your favorite individual moment from your career, and then also your favorite team moment from your career, David?
I think it's the same thing. I would say that the 2015 World Series, you know, I was diagnosed with, you know, my spinal stenosis, the condition that would ultimately end my career at the beginning of 2015. And to put in that work and do all those rehabs and physical therapy sessions to get back on the field and be a small part of that run to the World Series in 2015, you know, certainly the greatest team accomplishment for me. But for me personally, also, you know, game three, I get a chance to hit a World Series home run, which is, you know, what dreams are made of. You know, I remember in Virginia, you know, in my backyard, you know, 3-2 pitch, game seven of the World Series, although we didn't make it to game seven, you know, here comes the pitch, whack, home run. And to be able to live that out and enjoy the moment as you're kind of running around the bases and seeing Citi Field in New York just absolutely rock was, you know, probably my greatest individual moment on a baseball field as well.
With all the injuries that you did go through, I know that there's a lot of physical pain, but there also has to be mental pain as well. And now mental health is such a big topic of the conversation, and there's a lot of acceptance with mental health now in the year of 2020. When you go through your injuries, how did you deal with it, and how did you keep yourself in a good mental state of mind, even when you were going through things with a lot of pressure that clearly was not easy to do?
You know, that's a great question. And, you know, when I was diagnosed with spinal stenosis in the beginning of 2015, I had no idea what it was. And obviously, you know, the doctor, the first thing he tells me is just don't Google it. And of course, I Google it. And it's, you know, career ending this, career ending that. It's player A ended his career, player B ended his career. You know, so, you know, it was unlike me. But for about 24, 48 hours after the diagnosis, you know, I sulked. You know, I hung my head. I felt sorry for myself, which is not one of my characteristics. And, you know, after those 2 days, you know, I became angry. You know, I was mad that why is this happening to me? Why is it happening now? I'm supposed to be in the prime of my career. We have a good team, you know, and then it became this crazy challenge for me that, or the mantra that was in my head was, you're not going to allow this diagnosis to define you as a player or a person. You know, you're going to rise up to the challenge, you're going to beat it, and you're going to make it back on the field. Now, ultimately, it ended my career, but at the time, you know, it was this uphill climb of me guaranteeing myself in my head that I'm going to beat this, and I'm going to come back and help this team get to where we want to get. And ultimately, that was a World Series run, so I take a great deal of pride in, you know, kind of not rolling over and allowing it, you know, to define the end of my career. And, you know, I didn't play much more after that, but you know, I got a chance to, as we just talked about, experience the greatest thrill for me as a team and individually on a baseball field because I worked hard and came back and was able to finish that 2015 season with my team.
You're such a positive person, and there's one thing to be a great baseball player, but then there's another thing to have no one say a bad word about you, and that's pretty much what we have when we talk to David Wright and talk about David Wright. You can't find anyone that has a bad word to say about him. So, you know, what I just want to follow up with that, with your positive, upbeat attitude, and hey, when anyone goes through what you had to go through, there's going to be periods of negativity and frustration. How did you grow not to resent the game, which was your love, even though it was getting taken away from you?
You know, it's interesting because I was so fortunate. And I think throughout my career, I've always been very thankful of the opportunities that were given to me. Now, I'm sure a lot of it is just God-given ability. You know, thankfully, or at least I think, you know, my parents had fairly athletic genes, and, you know, they were passed down at some point. You know, but the foundation that, not just as a baseball player, but my upbringing was built on, was that this blue-collar approach of hard work and dedication will ultimately lead you to your goals and your dreams. And, you know, even my parents, you know, they'd be lying if they said, you know, when I was a kid, I'd say, I want to be a professional baseball player. They'd say, okay, you know, let's pump the brakes a little bit. Let's do good at school, put in the work there. You can put in the work in baseball, but there's always going to be a, you know, a plan B. And, you know, I made great grades because of it. I wasn't allowed to play baseball unless I made the grades. So I think my upbringing, you know, I was always fortunate to be in the position that I was, but, you know, my game was built on hard work and putting in the time. When I took the field on a nightly basis, you know, I wasn't the most talented. I wasn't the most gifted. I was 6 foot, 200 pounds. You know, I was playing against Barry Bonds and Derek Jeter and Mike Trout, and, you know, some of the best to ever put the uniform on. But I told myself when I took the field that night, I've prepared more than anybody else on this field, and for one night, I'm going to be the best player on this field. And that was my mindset, and I truly believed it, that I was more prepared than everybody. Therefore, I was going to be a better player that specific night.
When did you know, because you said that you always grew up wanting to be a baseball player, and hey, I wanted to be a baseball player too growing up as a kid, and then I realized I couldn't hit a curveball, so that dream went right out the window. When was that moment for you, though, David Wright, where you said, okay, this isn't just a dream and this is getting close to reality?
Well, I couldn't hit a curveball either, so thankfully I was okay at hitting the fastball. So, you know, I'm glad that pitchers never picked up on the not being able to hit the curveball thing. But, you know, I was always, you know, one of the better ones on my team growing up. You know, but when I got to high school, you know, I didn't know how I stacked up against the rest of Virginia or the rest of the East Coast or the kids from Florida or Texas or California or, you know, the Caribbean. You know, I didn't know how I stacked up. So I got invited to some of these, you know, big time tournaments where I played and fortunately had some good showings. But still, you know, I didn't know, you know, was I a first round draft pick? Was I a 10th round draft pick? You know, am I going to go to college? Am I going to sign? You know, I had no idea. So I would say I knew that I had a chance at making a living at this, probably in AA. In 2004, I started the season in AA, and I think I hit 350 or 360 the first couple months. And, you know, they say AA is where all the top prospects are. And I was like, okay, if I can do this against some of the elite prospects in baseball, you know, maybe I can do this at the major league level. And that gave me so much confidence, that start I got off in AA. And, you know, I ended the season in the big leagues, had a little bit of success there, and that just it snowballed for me and just gave me more and more confidence moving forward.
How has this transition been for you? I know you're working with the Mets still as an advisor, but what has the transition been like when you officially hang up the cleats and are no longer a player?
It's difficult. It really is. You know, I'd been a Met for over half my life. Every day I woke up, whether it was the season or the off season, it was, what can I do to get better? You know, my day revolved around either playing a baseball game or preparing for a baseball game or season. You know, so it was weird to wake up and not have that drive of building your day around baseball. And that's one of the things I miss most. I miss competing. I miss the camaraderie. I miss the team aspect. You know, I would say the only thing I don't miss is physically how I felt towards the end.
Yeah.
But it's tough to come to grips, and every athlete says it. You know, they want to go out on their own terms. They want to write their final chapter. And, you know, ultimately I didn't get that, but I kind of did with the Mets being so gracious and giving me that one last night, that kind of send-off where, you know, I got to kind of rest my head on my pillow at night knowing I did everything I could to get to that point. It wasn't enough physically. I just couldn't do it physically. You know, but I get to put this uniform on one more time, say thank you to the fans, say thank you to the city, and just share the love that I have for that organization.
What do you think you're doing 5 years from now? What is David Wright like professionally?
I hope, well, I don't know about professionally, but I hope being a pretty good father and a husband. You know, I got some young ones at home, so my coaching debut got interrupted by COVID. We got one game in of 3- and 4-year-old co-ed T-ball. And we did get our team pictures, but, you know, to prove it. But, you know, it's, I want to really be there for, I want to coach whatever they want to do. You know, I don't know much about soccer or, you know, basketball or volleyball, but, you know, whatever they want to do, I want to be a part of it. Professionally, I love staying involved with the Mets and with the game. But it has to be at kind of an arm's length. I can't do anything full-time right now. I owe it to my family to be here full-time. But just when I start missing it, you know, I get a chance to go to spring training and work with some of the younger infielders or work with some of the younger hitters. Then I come back and be, you know, be dad. And then I start missing it, and I get a chance to go to New York and, you know, sit in some of the front office meetings and, you know, talk about how to make the team better and, you know, the trade deadline and things like that. And, you know, I get the adrenaline pumping again, and then, you know, I come home and be dad. And, you know, so I get a chance to stay involved, but kind of in a part-time role. So that's probably what I foresee 5 years down the road. I hope I can stay involved. I hope I'm invited to stay involved. So that would be my goal.
So if the Mets come to you in 4 or 5 years, and I know what you just said about the family component being such a huge part of it, and they said, David Wright, we want you to be the next manager. Would you be able to turn that down? Because I know what you said about the family, but I think your love of the game may prevent you from turning that down.
Yeah, I don't. I would probably disagree because I don't think I can give the position what it deserves to be given. You know, I don't think that I could. I don't think I could do it justice with you know, what I want to do outside of baseball, you know, right now. And it sounds selfish, and I guess it is, but it mainly has to do, you know, with my young family. So, you know, it'd be an honor and a privilege to be considered in that light, but I'd probably say that I disagree in the fact that I don't think coaching or managing, and never say never, but I don't foresee it in my future. But, you know, again, I guess never say never.
Fair enough. What would you have been like, and I know you'll probably get this experience next year as a T-ball manager. I think a lot of people would be interested to see you manage some T-ball games.
Yeah, so, you know, it's kind of a bit of a funny story. Is my first T-ball game, I get there early. I don't know what to expect because I think, you know, I didn't know if we were the home team or away team. So one of the coaches has to set up the field, you know, put the bases in. You know, they're too young to line the field, but put the bases in, make sure all the tarps are off, the pitching, you know, all that stuff. And, you know, so I get there early. I'm the first one there. The opposing coach, you know, comes up and, you know, the opposing coach, you know, says, "Hey, nice to meet you." We introduce ourselves. He's like, you know, I said, "Hey, I'm gonna let you take the lead here. This is my first game. You know, you kind of follow your lead. You know, you let me know kind of some of the rules of 3 and 4 year old co-ed T-ball, and I'll follow suit." He goes, "Okay." He goes, "And plus, I played a little, you know, college ball." And I was like, "Oh, really? Oh, that's great." You know, he goes, "Yeah, I was, you know, it's pretty good." I said, "That's just great." He goes, "Did you play?" I said, "I dabbled
a
little
bit."
You know, no. I said, I said I dabbled a little bit, but I'm going to take your lead on this one. He says, "Okay," and we went out and played the T-ball game. So I got a, you know, nice chuckle out of that. But it's kind of fun to, you know, just kind of turn on that. The dad and the dad moment where you're kind of just coaching the T-ball team and they're running the wrong way on the bases and they don't know where the positions are, and you know, they get the biggest smile when they finally make contact off the tee for the first time. It's you know, pretty rewarding experience.
Wait, was this in New York, New Jersey? What state was this in?
No, so we're out in Southern California now.
Okay, how do you not know who David Wright is?
My wife's from out here, so you know, I guess. Again, I thought I was better than I was, and you know, it's just maybe I didn't, you know, make my mark against the Dodgers out here as much as I thought I did.
I think you had some success against them. Honestly, you guys beat them in a few postseason series.
We did. We got them twice. So you know, hopefully, I guess that wasn't enough.
Let me ask you this before we let David Wright run. Once again, the name of the book is The Captain. Comes out on October 13th. David Wright is my guest. You could also check out Anthony DiComo as well, who's a part of this writing process. Does a great job covering the Mets. How do you compare, since we talk about the Dodgers and beating them twice, how do you compare just the overall season of 2006 to 2015, which, you know, we saw the Mets lose in the NLCS and the Mets lose in the World Series both those years?
You know, that's an excellent question as well, and I've had some time to think of this, you know, while writing the book, because we cover both of those in the book, and they were such different teams. You know, 2006, you know, we had some mashers in the middle of that lineup. You know, we had Beltran, Delgado, Loduca was an all-star, Jose Reyes was an all-star. You know, we just had, seemed like all-star after all-star down our lineup, and, you know, we scored a ton of runs. You know, in 2015, it was so different because the team was built around our young starting stud pitching. I mean, you're talking about Harvey, DeGrom, Syndergaard, you know, Steven Matz. I mean, it was such a different feel. Now, I probably didn't get a chance to enjoy the 2006 run as much as I should have, because at the time I'm 23, 24 years old, and it's like, okay, you know, this is the first of many postseason experiences. You know, we got a young core. We're going to be back here next year. Well, that didn't happen for 9 years, and that was 2015. We make that run, and I really soaked it in and enjoyed those moments because I realized how much hard work goes into making the postseason, and I didn't get the opportunity for a 9-year stretch. So, you know, if you're asking if I had to pick one or the other, I would say the 2015 team was just, it was so rewarding for me personally and for us as a team with everything we had gone through, and you know, give me those young power pitchers, you know, any day of the week, and I think we can win against anybody.
When I walked out of this,
except the Royals.
Yeah, games 1, 4, and 5, David. Those should have been victories if we're being honest. But
yeah.
When I walked out of Citi Field that night after game 5, I was really proud of that team. And I thought they were going to get back and be good for such a long time because of the pitching. And then a lot of the pitching just unfortunately didn't reach its potential because of the injuries. But to see what's happened to Matt Harvey and hey, you've dealt with success and then you've dealt with some injuries at the end of your career and during your career too. Just what do you feel when you look back at what has transpired with Matt?
I mean, I'm so thankful that, A, I got a chance to get to know Matt on a personal level, you know, and B, you know, what he did for us as an organization. I mean, you're talking about a guy that really gave it all for the New York Mets and, you know, was about as dominant as anybody, you know, for that however many year stretch. So, you know, I owe almost all the credit to Matt and helping us not only get to the postseason, but get us to the World Series that year. And none of us get a chance to experience what World Series baseball is like without Matt Harvey. You know, I'm a huge fan of Matt. You know, I'm rooting for a turnaround here where he, you know, gets a second win, gets a second chance, and, you know, finds a way to get back to his former self because, you know, he certainly deserves it. And I think the game owes him, you know, for what he did for our organization and, you know, what he did for me personally and kind of putting us on his back and getting us to the World Series.
The last thing I'll say, and I just want to share this because I really want the listeners to know how great of a person you are. First time I met David Wright, just everyone listening on CBS Sports Radio is wrapping up with David Wright. Make sure you get his book coming out on October 13th. I was actually in probably 6th or 7th grade. I had blue frosted tips at a WFAN caravan event, and I met David, and my friend was actually just getting out of the hospital. He was in and out of the hospital because he was going through chemotherapy as he had Ewing sarcoma cancer, bone cancer, and David and Cliff Floyd actually left. I think you guys were going to a Knicks game, and Steve Traxel and Tom Glavine and Chris Woodward got a hold of you guys because all my friend wanted to do was meet David Wright. You guys blew off the Knicks game that night, came back to, I want to say it was the Hard Rock in New York City, and you spent 2 hours with us. And I thought that was one of the coolest things as someone that was in the 6th or 7th grade, and it really showed me how someone could have it all like David Wright, but at the end of the day, you're just an unbelievable person.
Well, I appreciate that. And you know, like I said, you setting that up for your friend speaks, you know, volumes of you as a friend more than, you know, us as coming in, and you set everything up. So you deserve all the credit for that. But yeah, it's, you know, I think a lot of athletes, none of us go out there and looking for credit, but I think that, you know, being in the position that we're in, we can certainly, you know, not just give back, but, you know, be influential in, you know, the next generation, not just of baseball players, but the next generations of citizens and try to pay it forward. So, you know, I appreciate you telling that story, but again, you deserve more of the credit than we do.
Nah, it's all you. I'm not going to take any credit for that one, but I appreciate your words. Once again, The Captain by David Wright and Anthony DiComo comes out on October 13th. He is David Wright. David, good health to you and your family. Really appreciate you doing this.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me. It was fun talking a little baseball.
Awesome, awesome stuff with David Wright. Tremendous player, but obviously a better person. This is Zach Gilb Show on CBS Sports Radio. As always, we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. We need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket Cam. When we come on back, I have a really good poll question for you, or is because of the subject matter, it's a really bad poll question? We'll get to it next.
Now back to the Zach Gilb Show.
Zach Gilb Show, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 855-212-4227. It's sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. All right, here is our really good but also really bad poll question of the day at Zach Gilb on Twitter. We know both need to be fired, but who needs to go first? Is it Dan Quinn with the Atlanta Falcons, or is it Adam Gase with the New York Jets? Now, let me be clear here. Dan Quinn should not have a job right now as an NFL head coach before the start of this season. To see the demise of the Atlanta Falcons, how he is still standing, is something that I truly cannot process. There's one thing, you blow the Super Bowl 28-3, you're not going to get fired after that. You're not. I'm not excusing it. It's an embarrassing, brutal loss. You're not going to get fired because of that. You're going to be allowed to come back the next year. The next year, you're going up against an Eagles team that, yes, they ended up winning the Super Bowl, but that was in the divisional round because the Eagles were coming off the bye. Falcons were coming off a playoff victory, and you couldn't beat Philadelphia, who did not play an offensively great game. And that game was not all that high scoring, if memory serves me right. And you had the ball late. You had a bunch of shots to Julio Jones, and you couldn't score. And you let Nick Foles beat you. So those 2 years, they're bad, but you're not going to lose your job over that. Even though with how bad as they are, because some owners will say, even though I want to see the victories there, I can accept that we keep on getting to the playoffs. What happened, though, in 2018 and 2019 is why he should have lost his job. And I was ahead of a game. I was calling for him to lose his job after that 2018 regular season where they did go 7-9. Because if you go from almost winning a Super Bowl to losing that game to then losing the second round of the playoffs and then missing the playoffs, something is off. But all right, you bring Dan Quinn back, and last year they go 7-9. To go from choking the Super Bowl to choking a second round game to then going 7-9 and then to going 7-9 after that, you think definitely he's gone and the Falcons would have a new coach this year. But that wasn't the case. And then the Adam Gase hire, the Jets didn't even want Adam Gase to be their head coach initially. They could tell you what they want whenever they hired him in that terrible press conference where his eyes were going all over the place. The Jets wanted Matt Rhule. The Jets' first option was to bring in Matt Rhule to be the head football coach. Matt Rhule told the Jets, no, though. This is at least the way that I interpret what happened and what I think happened, because Matt Rhule wasn't allowed to pick his offensive coordinator. Think about it. The Jets wanted to hire Matt Rhule, but they wouldn't trust the coach that they wanted to hire his offensive coordinator, to hire his staff. They could deny that all they want. That's what happened with the Jets situation. So you get Adam Gase, who at the time, I know in New York locally, that was considered a terrible hire. What are the Jets doing? I didn't think it was the worst hire in the world. I didn't love it, though. I didn't think that it was the right move, though. And now we sit here, one full year of Adam Gase in New York. The guy did go 7-9 last year, didn't have his quarterback for a few games because of mono, which that only happens to the Jets. And this year, this is my favorite stat through the first 3 weeks of the season. Did you know the Jets have not had a lead in a game for a single second? I'm not saying the Jets, Jets are 0-3. Let's get on. We knew the Jets are going to be bad. The Jets are supposed to be 0-3. To not have a lead, though, in a single second of the game, you could be bad, and then you could just be flat-out putrid. There is a difference. There are some teams that we know are going to be bad this year, but they show some fight. They show some hunger. They take a lead. They surprise you for a quarter. So far through the first three Jet games this year, there has been zero reason to stick around for the second half. First game of the season against the Bills, they scored a touchdown to take it within 10. And whoever the announcer was on CBS, I remember him saying when Jamison Crowder scored, oh my goodness gracious, the Jets are somehow in this game. That shows you how bad the Jets are. Then in week two, 49ers injured left and right, wasn't even close. Raheem Mostert scored 80 yards on the first play from the line of scrimmage. And then yesterday, right out of the gate, pick six. Right, you turn in the game and Darnold throws two pick sixes. The Jets have not had a lead for a single second. Say it with me. The Jets have not had a lead through three games for a single second. So I ask myself, who needs to go first? And when you talk up the resume and how much the train has crumbled, the easy argument would be Dan Quinn. But both of these teams, and this is a fair statement to say, more than fair, are not making the playoffs. So who gets hurt more by keeping their coach around? And I think it's the Jets. Because with the Falcons, we know their defense stinks. We know they have a good offense. Unfortunately, it's already too late. They're 0-3. Because of their incompetence in this past offseason not to make the right move. You're not going to salvage this season. Even if you do salvage this season, where are you going to go if you're the Falcons? 8-8 if everything goes right? You're not going to be above 500. You're not going to be a playoff team. When I look at the Jets, you're ruining Sam Darnold right before your eyes. So if you're a Jets fan, the only reason you want to keep Adam Gase is that you don't believe in Sam Darnold, and then you want to trade Sam Darnold and get Trevor Lawrence. So when I look at this, this is maybe the toughest poll question I've ever asked. Because you're basically asking me, which bad coach do you want to keep more? And yes, I actually enjoy seeing the Jets do really poorly. Because if anyone thought the Jets would be somewhat decent this year, I don't get. I don't get whatsoever. You got nothing around around Sam Darnold. Nothing. And you traded Jamal Adams. What do you expect? You expect a bad football team. I just hate to see, even though I enjoy poking fun at the Jets, I hate to see a young quarterback get wasted. And right now you're seeing that young quarterback get wasted in Sam Darnold. So I would get rid of Adam Gase, because Adam Gase against the 49ers on a fourth down when they were down by double digits, didn't have a play call and tried to kick a field goal. I think it was like 23-6 or whatever it was, 24-6. It was something crazy. So I would go with Gase just because it affects potentially your future with Sam Darnold right now. Who would you go with, Trace? You go Dan Quinn or Adam Gase? Because I think if I put this, you know, when I look at the poll question results, and maybe I'm wrong, I could see a lot of people go, oh, Dan Quinn, because this offense has so much talent and Dan Quinn's a defensive coach and that's what's holding them back. But with both these teams being a lost cause, I really do believe it's Gase because of the young quarterback.
You're totally right, because it's just he was hired to be the answer for Sam Darnold.
The QB whisperer, Peyton Manning.
He was in the same room. What? He was in the same room as him one time, and yeah. Now all of a sudden it's just. So, yeah, I'm with it. It has to be Adam Gase.
Like, yeah.
What a disaster.
All right, let me see these results right now. Let me just refresh them so we get the most up-to-date poll question results. Wow. 55.3% say it's Adam Gase right now, needs to go first. 44.7% say it's Dan Quinn. So I would operate under that assessment. Most people think, like me, it's Gase because of Darnold. And then when you look at Dan Quinn, it's, all right, that team should be a lot better. But when you started 0-3, there's no way to save that team. Because even last year, they started off poorly and they finished the year 7-9. So if you make this move, what does it really save you? So maybe if you're the Falcons, you'd rather have the worst draft position than making an interim coach there, light a little fire in these guys' tummy, and then you end up going, I don't know, 6-10 or 7-9, and you move a few draft spots back. Number one pick, Chase. That's going to be fun. Jets stink. Giants stink. Falcons stink. Washington's a bad football team, but they have a victory. I'll tell you, I've been impressed with Carolina through three games. First game, they should have beat the Raiders. Second game, they lose to the Bucs. Yesterday, they beat the Chargers. Carolina, I don't think they'll be the number one overall pick. I don't. And who coaches them? Matt Rhule.
And the Jaguars, too. They've gotten rid of every player with talent, and they're still fighting hard.
Yeah. I mean, that's the difference. Carolina and the Jaguars are bad teams.
Right.
But at least they're showing you something. At least they're making the game watchable. The Giants don't make the games watchable. The Falcons, they make the game watchable because they take a big lead and they go, how can we mess it up this week? What Dan Quinn's doing now is actually impressive. Because how you blew the game against the Cowboys and the players who got to recover the onside kick, you go, I can't get worse than that. And that's a team that's been through 28-3. This week, it was even worse. 16 points they were up with 7.5 minutes to go. And you choked it to the Bears, who are the worst 3-0 team in the history of the league, who now have Nick Foles as their starting quarterback. So chime in on that. You can do it on the phones. You can also do it on Twitter, at Zach Gelb. Gase or Dan Quinn, who needs to go first? We'll take a break. When we come on back, we got the news brief.
Now back to the Zach Gelb Show. Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
All right, let's roll. We start off in Philadelphia with the WIP morning show. They had Doug Peterson on, and Doug Peterson said it's a knee-jerk reaction to pull Carson Wentz right now.
No, you don't go there. That's a knee-jerk reaction. That's a reaction to, you know, things that sometimes are, you know, the aura that's out there, right? I mean, that's not what we believe internally. And we're going to continue to get better. Carson's our quarterback. We're gonna get it fixed. He's gonna get it fixed. And you know, we got a long season. Listen, we're only a half game out of first place, for goodness sakes. I mean, you know, the whole division right now is not playing very good football. So, you know, we're not that far off.
I don't want to hear from teams right now like the Eagles, the Giants, and Washington talking about how they're still in this race. Dallas is going to win the division. It's just going to be, will Dallas be 9-7 and win the division and just back in because the division stinks? Or will Dallas go out and actually win the division and send a emphatic statement by being 11-5? Those are things that will still be to be determined. But I don't buy the Eagles this year. I know the Eagles have been comeback kids the last few years, but the offense line's bad. They have no weapons. And Carson Wentz, who saved you last year, and we're not even talking about the defense, but Carson Wentz, who saved you last year, isn't playing well this year. You don't bench Carson Wentz, though, to go to Jalen Hurts, who I like, but he's an unknown, let's be real. And Wentz is under contract through 2024, so that's very early in the process to bench Carson Wentz. It'd be one thing if Carson was the only problem, but there's a lot of problems in Philly. You don't do that after three games, but it's embarrassing that they tied the Bengals yesterday. Let's go to Chicago, talking about embarrassing. The Falcons, they somehow blew that game yesterday, and now the Bears are 3-0. But even though they're 3-0, they made a quarterback change for the future, because yesterday it was Nick Foles leading the Bears back, as we saw another Atlanta Falcons epic choke. Here is Matt Nagy saying Foles is the guy.
Got up this morning and went through the tape, and at the end of it, we decided that we're going to start Nick Foles as a starter against Indianapolis. So both quarterbacks are aware of that.
Now, here's the thing. They play Indy next week, like the coach just said. It's the right move to go Foles over Trubisky. Look what just happened this past week. You're playing a much better defense in Indianapolis, and the only thing that I'll caution here, now, I would still go Nick Foles, but Frank Reich, he knows Nick Foles very well, and he's the coach now of the Indianapolis Colts. So does he know a thing or two that gets Foles to throw a ball that he shouldn't have or make an extra mistake? Something to watch for this upcoming week. I'm not a big believer in Nick Foles, even though he's been a Pro Bowl MVP and a Super Bowl MVP, but it's the right move to go to Foles and to bench Trubisky. I'm just surprised how quickly this happened. Because remember in the offseason, oh no, we love Mitch. Oh, this is a different Mitch Trubisky. He really earned the job. What did he really show in this condensed training camp with no preseason as well? You started Mitch Trubisky the first few games because Matt Nagy, your job's on the line. Ryan Pace, your job's on the line. And Ryan Pace was the one that drafted Mitch Trubisky when he could have had Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson. So this was inevitable. We knew Trubisky was eventually going to be benched. I didn't think, though, it would happen third week into the season, moving to week four. And I never would have thought the Bears would have got off to a 3-0 start. Next up, let's hear from Ron Rivera. Ron Rivera on talking about if there will be a cutoff point where they'll bench Dwayne Haskins.
Truthfully, they deserve better. I mean, when you look at the way, you know, Deron played and Jonathan and Montez, I mean, you know, guys like that are leaving it on the field. John Bostic, I mean, you know, guys played hard. You know, then you turn around the offense side and you look at those guys on the offensive line were battling and fighting too. And, you know, the things that the backs did, the receivers and tight. I mean, you have to, you know, say at some point there is. And I'll cross that bridge when I get there. There are guys in that locker room that are playing well enough for us to win. And again, we have to make sure everybody is playing well enough to win at that point. And there is a cutoff point for me. There is.
They were in that game yesterday up against Cleveland. We'll see when that cutoff point is, but what is Kyle Allen, what is he going to do? And can Alex Smith, is he going to take a snap again under center? I'm still not sold on that. Haskins in a position this year where he's set up to fail. And I'm not saying he's going to be a great quarterback. I don't think that. But what is he throwing to? Now, Dontrell Inman, who I like. He was a guest of the show. He had two touchdowns yesterday. You got McLaurin. That's about it. You got McLaurin. That's about it to throw to. This was the problem with Washington going into the year. You knew the front seven was going to be really good, and you knew their offense was going to be really bad. So it's inevitable that a change will happen. And Washington, it's probably best for them, even though they're showing fight, it's probably best for them to be the worst team in the league. You get Chase Young this past draft, and then you get Trevor Lawrence. Hello, you'd be set up for the future. All right, let's go to Dan Quinn, my best pal Dan Quinn. He takes blame for another blown lead. Yeah, obviously you should take blame for a coach. Let's hear this, Jim.
It falls on me in all spaces. I want to make sure we're clear on that. But we're all in this together. And so when there's a game, there's things to do differently offensively, defensively on teams. So we are all connected on it together.
No. You can't play this. We're all in this together crap. Let's go sit around the campfire and sing Kumbaya and eat a s'more. Coach, your defense stinks. You're a defensive mind. The offense put up enough points the last 2 weeks for you to win the game, and your defense choked. You shouldn't have a job anymore, and you won't be in this all much together for much longer, because if you keep this crap up, you should have been fired 2 years ago. You should have been fired last year, too. Then Arthur Blank's going to have to step in and say, Dan, even though I love you, even though we're all in this together, it's time to go. It's been time. Dan Quinn, oy, enough. That's what he does. I'll take blame, but we're all in this together. May as well just have stopped after you say, I'll take blame. Oh, yeah, yeah. Here's Sean Payton on the Saints losing to the Raiders and then losing last night to the Packers. Very quickly, have they fallen from being 1-0, defeating the Bucs? Now they're 1-2. Here's Sean Payton.
You're frustrated as a coach because that starts with us, and we've got to do a better job. We've got to, you know, get ready to play a better game against Detroit. That's our industry. You know, we're 1-2 right now, and it's been a while since we've felt that, and yet 3 years ago we were 0-2. So, you know, a little bit of a gut check.
You should win next week. Who knows when Michael Thomas is coming back, but your next four games, Lions, Chargers, Panthers, Bears, no excuses for Houdat Nation. Real quickly, if I could squeeze it in, here's Bill O'Brien saying he's not panicking yet, even though his team's 0-3.
We haven't played anybody in the division yet. There's a lot of football left. It's not where you want to be, but we have a really, you know, veteran team in many aspects, and so I don't think anybody's panicking, but you know, everybody knows that 0-3 is not where we want to be.
Coach, you should be panicking. I know you had a miserable start to the year with a tough schedule, and it would have been crazy if you even had probably one win leading up to this point. At least you showed some fight yesterday, but the first two games you weren't even competitive. At 0-3, you got to have some urgency. You got to show some fight to potentially turn it around. Because you could lose this game coming up on Sunday. You could. You go up against the Vikings. The Vikings are a bad 0-3 team too. But don't tell me that you're not panicking yet, because you should be. Brian Bilk next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.